They say plants like music.
Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Hello and welcome to the People Who Read People podcast. I'm Zachary Elwood. This is a podcast aimed at better understanding other people and better understanding ourselves. You can learn more about it at peoplewhoreadpeople.com. In November of 2023, I talked to Yaakov Hirsch about anti-Semitism and the Middle East conflict and about trying to understand other people's perspectives, even when we greatly disagree with them. If you haven't listened to that one, I recommend it because it's a more solid introduction to Yaakov's ideas. We talk about the Holocaust and about the so-called banality of evil and much more. So this talk you're watching now is a follow-up to that one. Yaakov is someone who writes about what he calls Hasbara culture, what he sees as a tendency of some Jewish and Israel defending people to be overly us versus them and antagonistic in their thinking. One manifestation of this would be people being too quick to call people and ideas anti-Semitic when they're not actually anti-Semitic. For example, you'll often hear people describe harsh criticism of Israel as anti-Semitic, even when that connection seems very subjective and debatable. You can find various things online that Yaakov has written about so-called Hasbara culture and other related topics by searching for his name. You can also follow him on Twitter at Yaakov Hirsch. His name is spelled Yaakovhirsch. So this episode you're watching now is the second talk I had with Yaakov. We returned to some topics that we touched on in the first talk. For anyone listening on audio, this was a talk recorded on video. So if you want to watch it in video format, you can find that on my YouTube channel. Also during this talk, Yaakov and I got on the subject of American polarization and Trump. And because Yaakov is a professional poker player, we also talked about poker towards the end. So I've split this talk into three parts. The first one, the one you're watching now, is about the Middle East conflict and anti-Semitism. The second one will be about Trump, Trump supporters, our divergent views on Trump, and the American divides in general. And the third episode will be us talking about the high-stakes poker story of Robbie Jade Liu being accused of cheating. Okay, here's the talk with Yaakov Hirsch.
Hi, Yaakov. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Thanks for joining me to talk more about some tough things.
My pleasure.
To carry on the conversation we had earlier. So maybe we could start with, for things that were top of your mind, for things that we didn't cover well or didn't touch on in the first talk we had about Israel-Palestine. Topics. What's top of your mind there, would you say?
The most important take from that story is that there was a fight between politics and political science, and the politics beat the political science. And I'd like to explain what that means, and that this will help us going forward with whatever we talk about. This idea of political science versus politics will help us navigate through the issues we're going to discuss. So,
that's... okay. Would you like to kick it off? Because I could kick off.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, in the last podcast, I said that there was this fight between two historians in the 1990s, and it was really important and complex business. But I'm going to sum it up like this. There was a historian, Christopher Browning, and a different historian,
Goldhagen.
Yeah. And they had a fight about certain Germans. We all know that during World War II, during the Holocaust, when Germans killed the Jews, a lot of them were ideological. In other words, they grew up with the Nazis, and they were just basically brainwashed to hate the Jews. So when they killed the Jews, it was like, yes, I'm killing Jews. But this historian, Browning, discovered that some German soldiers were not like that. Some German soldiers killed the Jews because they didn't want to look bad in front of their comrade who was killing the Jews. All sorts of, meaning it wasn't really, it wasn't anti-Semitism that
killed. Peer pressure kinds of right, factors. Yeah. Of,
so this other book, Hitler's Willing Executioner, came along, this Goldhagen, and he said, no, you're wrong. All Germans, when they killed the Jews because they hated the Jews. It was this evil, that this evil thing that was in their mind and not just normal human. In other words, we can't learn, and it's not universal. Whatever we saw about the German killing the Jew, Christopher Browning was saying, wow, we could learn this for the next genocide, right? Look how people behave in this situation. And Goldhagen said, no, you're wrong. This is nothing universal about the story, right? We can't learn about the German killing the Jew, anything about any other soldier anywhere else, right? And Browning said, no, this is a human thing, right? In this situation, when you're ordered to kill someone, right, you will kill that person even if you're like, I don't feel like killing the person, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So in this fight, the historians believed Browning and the public believed Goldhagen, that there was something called eliminationist anti-Semitism and the German had it. And last podcast, I showed how this idea was, how this idea affected the world. But the bottom line is that the political scientist, which was the real historian, which was Browning, was defeated. So now
in the mainstream, you're saying.
Now I'm going to quote Hilberg. This is where we start. Raoul Hilberg, he was like the dean of Holocaust historians. He reviewed the fight. And this is what he said at the end of the review. Goldhagen wanted to describe what these men were thinking in the course of their of such action. And he says they were thinking about, they were evil, is what he said. It was not factual evidence that convinced him, for he had none. Goldhagen mentioned these words often in the 600 pages and added others like unspeakable, murderous, horrific, demonological, vitriolic, and gruesome. The adjectives are accusatory. They are taken from the domain of politics and not political science. By the end of 1996, it was clear that in sharp distinction from lay readers, much of the academic world had wiped Goldhagen off the map. Okay? So now, I'm going to explain to the viewer, what does this mean? What's the difference between politics and political science? Now, I'm going to give you this example. You see on YouTube or wherever on TV, where a serial killer, after they're in prison a few years, you have these experts come to interview the guy, right? They come with the pads, they're FBI, they're learning to become FBI experts, they're interviewing every serial killer.
Profilers, yeah.
Profilers, et cetera. Yeah. You will notice that when they talk to the killer, to the serial killer, they're very nice, right? They're not judging him, not saying, how could you do what you did? They're like, oh, do you want something to drink? And they were asking questions. What did you feel like when you were doing this? They need to know the truth, right?
They're detectives. Yeah.
Right, they're really detectives, and they need to know what they can get from this person, which will help the world understand what gets someone to be a serial killer. Right, so imagine, So it's very important to be objective there, right? That's right, to not influence, not get angry at the person. So you're just going to be objective. You're not going to judge this person as you're writing your report. You're not going to write in the middle, I cannot believe that guy's such an animal, right? As soon as to start writing that in the report, we'd be like, look, we can't take this person, this person is, had a cousin who was killed by a serial killer or something, this researcher, right? So the political scientist is the one who's really being objective, right? Just really,
or the psychologist,
whatever. Yeah. I'm using.
Yeah, you're, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is what Hilberg used, right?
Contrasting it with politicians. Yeah, yeah.
So, right. So that's the importance. And now I'm going to show you in our world examples. We're going to talk about what's going on today. I'm going to show you the examples where you have politics, which we should all believe, yes, that's quote objective, versus political science, right? And if we're able to identify when we're looking at a situation, right, what's politics and what's political science, this will help us understand the world. For instance, yesterday in the New York Review of Books, there were
before you start the examples, I do want to say, like, since we're kind of wrapping up the last episode, I think, one of your points, or one of the major points of that last episode, our last talk, was about how when you when you view people through a lens of like, they have this, you know, they kind of like aren't human, they're evil, these kind of pathologies that are inexplicable really and can't be compared to other humans. When you do that, you create like a wall of not really being interested in understanding what drives them. You know, you kind of put them in this class where it's easily able to
cognitive empathy. When you have the scientists, they are trying to imagine being the serial killer, right? They're trying to get into a set and be that person, say, oh, right. So that's what this is about. We're trying
and to. It's almost like when other people do bad things, it makes us less cognitively, you know, we're less empathetic to them, but that can be a real problem if you're, you know.
We are judging, right? We're always judging, right? But there are people who are trying to understand and not judge. So I just want to give you this example of Hamas, and then we could move on to whatever you want, okay? Mm-hmm. So in The Atlantic, which is the most influential magazine, Yair Rosenberg, who was a writer there, wrote an article about Hamas, okay? And I'm going to read you the reaction of an opinion writer of the Washington Post, what he said about this article in The Atlantic about Hamas. So he said, my biggest critique is the assumption in Yair Rosenberg's piece that evil acts are inherently irrational, quote, and therefore Hamas is best understood as an irrational actor. There's no room for contingency, agency, or individuals in this account. ISIS was as sadistic as they come, but those of us who worked on ISIS spent a lot of time trying to understand the complexities of the group in a nuanced, analytical way. It wasn't enough to simply say that ISIS was evil and be done with it. That would be useless. It's almost too obvious to state, so I feel a bit silly saying it, but terrorism doesn't just fall from the sky. Terrorism is, quote, not inevitable. There's a whole body of academic research on what makes the resort to terrorist acts more or less likely. It makes me nervous when an article about Hamas doesn't quote any experts on Hamas. There are researchers who have spent years studying basically everything Hamas said or done. Can you really write an article on the group without engaging Tariq Bastoni's Hamas Was Contained? And he lists these other books that he said, how do you write an article about Hamas without, you know, you have people who have spent their whole life trying to understand Hamas. And that's when we write serious articles, we take all these experts and we, you know, Yair Rosenberg is not an expert on Hamas. But the point is that article wasn't talking about Hamas. The article was talking about evil. It was enough to say that Hamas is evil and Yair Rosenberg is an expert on evil. So he wrote about evil. Whereas, you know, when you're a political, you want to understand. In other words, you would like to interview every Hamas member to really understand what happened. You're just like we did with the serial killer. You'd say, hey, why? How do you get it? You try to find out how they got here. Now, just one more. It's the same with Hamas. This is Eric Levitz, New York Magazine. He wrote an article about Sam Harris, who has the same view as Yair Rosenberg. And this is what he said. Sam Harris says the Israel-Hamas war is a battle between civilization and savagery, and that Palestinian terrorism is motivated solely by radical Islam, not any earthly grievance. Which shows that atheists aren't immune to fundamentalist thinking. Ironically, Harris's own position resembles religious fanaticism in its willful incuriosity. On Israel-Palestine, the celebrated atheist refuses to test the dogmatic tenets of a Manichaean worldview against either the historical record or present-day evidence. Instead of challenging the audience to grapple with the complex origin of the present war, he serves them a fairy tale in which the forces of civilizations struggle against evildoers whose malevolence derives from no political history or context, but merely from the demonic possession by the mind virus of jihad. Mm-hmm. Okay? And Robert Wright, one other time, there was a fight about the understanding of terrorists, an American terrorist. And one side said he had jihadi intent, right? And Robert Wright responded, he said, jihad, what does that mean? He said, we have to look at this person, right? We have to investigate. And you put all these together. That's how you get to be a jihadi. Right. Mm-hmm. He said jihadi is like a bomb. It's not one ingredient. It takes a whole bunch of things together. And that ends up with a jihadi. So this is an example of where you have experts. The evil, the argument about the German, right, was that he was evil. That argument now wins debates, right? Mm-hmm. If you use that evil argument, it defeats the people who say, let's try to understand it better. Okay, this terror, what's Hamas? Why did, you know, was there ever a time when they wanted a peace with Israel? All of that stuff.
Well, yeah, okay. I listened to that Sam Harris, his recent one, you know, where he basically was doing what you were describing, where it was struck. And I'm usually a fan of Sam Harris. I think he often goes into a lot of nuance, but on this, he did seem very simplistic because it seemed to just be like making arguments like Hamas, you know, does bad things, much, you know, much worse things than, you know, on these levels, like using, you know, hiding behind their own people and these kinds of things. Therefore you can't compare them, and therefore you must side with Israel. That's what his gist of his argument seemed to be. But it seemed to be like, that's a very simplistic framing because, you know, it doesn't get into the curiosity of like, well, they, you know, why are they doing what they're doing? And even if you believe, like Sam Harris, you know, makes a big thing of, you know, he criticizes Islam, which is, you know, I think there's points there too. But even that is like, isn't Islam also a factor, one of other factors too, in the way these people behave? Like, it's not, you can't just say like, you know, it's very simplistic to just say they're driven by fundamentalist Islam and leave it at that. Like,
ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay,
when the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone,
or you say,
hang it in there,
because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak,
then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Sam Harris lives in a world of ideas and not people, because according to Sam Harris, every Muslim has a little bit of ISIS in them. He says it all comes from the Quran. And the question with each Muslim is, where are you in the continuum to ISIS? But that's not the real world. So the hate that he has contributed to, if you're living on the street and the Muslims move down your block and you've been listening to Sam Harris, you think to yourself, okay, where are they on the ISIS spectrum, on the jihadi spectrum? But that's, and then when you see people reacting to Harris, they're like, you know, you don't know any Muslims. You don't, these are not real, right? So he thinks about ideas rather than human beings.
Well, it reminds me of, you know, some far right people who would say, you know, say very pessimistic things about Islam, about Muslims. But then you just look at the statistics of like, how many terrorist attacks are there really, you know, when you get down to it? Like, obviously it's a problem. It's a big problem, but it's also like, there's many Muslims living in America that, you know, don't commit jihad or terrorist acts.
That's so that's why it's so important to understand, to have cognitive empathy with the white races, because they, like Sam Harris, they look, again, believe that this Muslim is sort of happy when they're not real Americans, they're happy when this terrorism.
Right, they're cheering secretly or outwardly.
The issue is, if they were to somehow move into if they become neighbors with a Muslim in a few months, their whole, like, everything about the world would change, because they'd see, oh, this person's just like me, a normal person, right? It's so they have these ideas which are not true about the world. So when you make art, it's very important which argument you use against the racist for him to say, oh, I understand where I might be thinking wrong, rather than calling him a racist and it's like, okay, right? That's what we do. You're evil.
Yeah. And I will say too, like I have some, you know, I think Sam Harris has also made some good points in that, like people calling Sam Harris like racist and such for that is wrong to me too, because he is, you know, even if you disagree with him, he's trying to make a point about a religion. Like many people making points about negative aspects of Christianity aren't called racist, you know. So just to throw in there that I do appreciate Sam Harris, a lot of what he says, but I do think on this thing, I was, you know, finding myself being like, I think he's alighting over a lot of nuance there. Yeah.
He's saying it's because of political correctness that we're not telling the truth. He says all these professors, right, all these things they're saying, they're only saying what they're saying because they have to be politically correct. So, and with one sentence, he wipes away all the experts. Right.
He's erasing all the nuance and erasing political science
with statements like that. He's erasing political science, and we're left with articles like that in The Atlantic.
I was going to move on to something related, but.
No, and that's why you end just for the present day, where you have experts saying that Israel is close to committing genocide. You have Holocaust experts in the New York Times. These people don't go on TV, right? They do research. And now Omer Bartok, one of the great Holocaust historians, is going on every show that will have him. And he's saying Israel is about to commit genocide or is committing genocide. And it's ignored because that's, he must be a leftist. He must, right? That's how when you ask, if you ask The Atlantic, look, this guy, oh, he must be, you know, we don't listen to experts anymore, right?
Although, from some people's perspective, there's a lot of, you know, anti-Israel and pro-Palestine bias in mainstream media. Like, how do you see that? Because I know people who, you know, have some, you know, valid criticisms, like the, you know, one of the recent ones with New York Times rushing to the story
I am not taking a stand. I'm not judging Israel or not. I am stating the I don't have a position on any of these things. Okay. I'm not
about the specifics of the Alawites, right, or whatever.
I'm not an expert, but I do know that Omer Bartov is an expert. And I do know that this guy, I'm trying to have cognitive empathy with this busy guy, and he's stopping what he's doing, an Israeli Jew, and he's going writing op-eds in the New York Times and going everywhere. And he's saying the prime minister of the country said these people are Amalek, are from the Bible. And he's telling basically we should not, the civilians and Hamas are the same thing. And what's happening is a genocide in front of us. So what I'm saying, because of this mix up, I don't know if it's genocide, but I'm saying it's the Atlantic doesn't cover that because.
Right. They're not. I get what you're saying. I think that what both of you and I are trying to do is trying to examine the understandable ways people can disagree and not try to paint people that have a different view than us as like these monsters. Whereas, like, I think, you know, I think that's what you and I are both fighting.
Yes,
about.
I mean, at a high level.
Yeah.
If I have, can I share a tweet of a girl in a college? A Jewish girl in the college, and she had this march with other pro-Palestinian people, and she's telling everybody.
Oh, yeah, you know, that one.
Right. So think about that. The difference between her, this Jewish girl who's like this some school march against the war or something like that, right? Or she said from the river to the sea. And she, in this tweet, she's describing, when you listen to this person, you say she's just trying to do good. There's nothing what's described about. She says, oh, my friends are so sensitive to me because I'm Jewish. They ask me. And she says, we have no problems here, right? No one hates the Jews. Everything is great. And
it's overstated. Yeah.
Thing. You're the people that is creating all this hatred in the school by you misinterpreting what's going on. So
that was an eloquent tweet. Yeah, I saw that one. And
I just want to say that's like us being the scientist into
what's into actually the circular,
right. We just
what are people actually thinking? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that corresponds to what I'm seeing. It's like I see so many people speaking in the most pessimistic ways on both sides. You know, on both sides, it's like they'll interpret, you know, a statement in support of feeling bad about Israel suffering or feeling bad about Palestinian suffering, people will interpret those in various worst case scenarios. And I see this playing out so many times, and I see people, you know, interpreting pro-Palestinian marches as, you know, being for Hamas or being for terrorism. And it just, you know, as with a lot of conflict, the perceptions of how much maliciousness there is seems very overstated compared to when you actually look at like the things it's that are happening, what people are saying.
Because the two sides have a different experience of the world. I just want to say this, like when some of the pro-Palestinians, they look at Hamas, like in the back of their mind, you know what they say? They say to themselves, what do you expect? Or something like that. And that's what politicals, they say, yes, if you occupy a people at some point, which is what Israeli security officers say. So just that thought, the thought of course, the way Hamas behaved, we have to understand why they did what they did. But just the idea that if you occupy a people, you know, and all the, like I say, all the security people told Netanyahu all these years, there's going to be an explosion. You can't keep on doing this, right? But you can't. But if you even do that, that's not good, because Hamas is evil. That's that you can't respond to the Hamas is evil, because and the whole world is seeing dead babies is the problem, right? They see dead babies, and what are they told? Hamas is evil. And the next day they see more dead babies, and what are they told? Hamas, you know how evil Hamas is, and you're sympathetic with evil. So it's two different experiences of the world, and each side doesn't understand the other side. And this is might be a civil war before the Trump civil war next year for the election. Because it's totally different, and each side doesn't even understand the way the other side experiences the world, right? Mm-hmm. For just one last thing, for Israeli Jews, this really was, they're talking about this like it was a Holocaust, meaning the IDF is now going into 1940, whatever, and they're fighting the Nazis, right? This is the story, right? And the other people are saying, what do you mean? You're killing dead babies. Whereas they think a lot of the leaders are saying it's all, you know, they're all the same, right? It's no different.
Right. You shared a tweet yesterday, I think it was by Barry Weiss, where she was calling something Holocaust denial, which didn't seem like Holocaust denial to me, but you draw attention to a lot of those kinds of things, right?
Right. I mean, it's the Jewish people with the most influence. I wrote an article, Barry Weiss wants to speak for the Jews. And to speak for the Jews, I just want to show you this book, just what political scientists, it's a book called Victimhood Discourse in Contemporary Israel, right? So this is what social scientists do. They look at the discourse, all this Holocaust talk, and they analyze it. You have 10 different experts, and they write and analyze one aspect of the victimhood, and they try to make sense of how the Holocaust, the understanding of the Holocaust, how we came to where we were and how threatening it is, right? That's political science. Now, what Barry Weiss does is not political science, but the people who follow her believe that she's saying political science. It's very important. Mm-hmm. She's not saying, oh, this is my opinion because I was brought up Jewish. She's saying, no, this is the truth. Right? Yeah. And meanwhile, it's just politics, right? Mm-hmm. So she takes innocent people, right? Who, for instance, I just want to say, this was the Harvard Crimson. They wrote this article at some point during the war. And at the end, possibly the writer was describing about the cutting off the heads or whatever, something like that. And they put it on the bottom. It said, this hasn't been substantiated yet, right? So imagine being the editor of, you have to produce, right, these articles, and you need to state the truth. Now, when Barry Weiss, that's if you think about the human beings doing this stuff. But Barry Weiss said, no, this is, she called it Holocaust denial in real time. So so when she says that, she's all the people she's talking to, the Jewish community, they are made to feel, and they already feel, that it is 1939 Germany, which is what I've been describing for however many years, that this is the success of this worldview. Look at, it's only going to get worse, because there will be terrorist attacks against Jews, unfortunately, because there are enough Muslims watching what's happening. And Israel says, we're the Jewish state. Every which way they say, we're the Jewish state. We're the Jewish state. Jews have to march for Israel. Don't have to. So when a Muslim, there are people out there, as asked Sam Harris, how many jihadis are out there, or asked Robert Wright, how people might become jihadis, right? Is at some point, someone's going to see this. This is reality. I'm not saying, right? That's, it has to happen. And they're going to do an act of hopefully not whatever. And the interpretation of that event is not going to be that some Muslim is watching this killing and he just killed someone. Instead, Barry Weiss and Michael Hasbara culture is it's the beginning of the end. That means the whole story about what that person did, that one terrorist attack, we can't have cognitive empathy. This meaning of that act is now turned into something totally different. That totally different thing is the most influential force in politics. And that's what I write about. So that's why each tweet is important, because I'm saying, look at what's happened. Think about the real world and think about the interpretation. And that's why you have real Holocaust scholars going to the New York Review of Books and saying, you cannot do this. This is, Israel has a powerful state with the most modern weapons, and you're talking about them as if they're in the Warsaw Ghetto. Right? You keep on telling Netanyahu, think about it. He told his people, this is a war, tribal war against our eternal enemies, right? So Barry Weiss is cultivating, she's the most influential person in cultivating that is the reality, that it is a Holocaust again, right? I've been very harsh on her. Some social scientists, which I quote, believe this is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe it's the Holocaust all the time, you're going to suddenly, like I've said, she is responsible for so much anti-Semitism by this behavior. Okay.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Yeah, I want to make some analogies there to the liberal conservative conflict in America, but I'm going to come back to that because I see
it's
some
perfect. It's conflict. Perfect analogy.
Conflict perfect has analogy. So many conflict. You know, no matter how it happens, has so many analogous things. And then there's the asymmetry aspect of like who's perceived or who is more powerful and feeling more weak in a society. Like I would say. Conservatives do. They feel like they don't have power is what allows them to do more aggressive things because they feel like they are fighting this ultra powerful force. So that allows them to, for example, to support somebody like to be more okay with somebody like Trump who takes a more aggressive approach in the way they speak and these kinds of things or the way they act. And, a lot of people won't like that analogy on both sides, but I think there's very much something to the perceived asymmetry of power and that, making you feel more okay with aggressive or, doing horrible things, basically. But I want to come back to that. I do want to touch on something that I think we could have touched on more in our last talk, which I think is important because it's something you've written about. It's about how, and this is just a general aspect of conflict where people will take out pieces of bad behavior, one-off or rare bad behaviors and hold them up as if they're super meaningful. So that in the context of Israel-Palestine, that could or anti-Semitism, that might be somebody taking a tweet and like showcasing it and being like, look at this horrible anti-Semitic direct message somebody sent me. And people act as if that is significant when, you know, the number of people who have those views could be very, very low. And some of the messages could be sent by like children or these kinds of things are just like kind of like trolls looking to get reactions. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Okay. So there's this word ideology that's thrown around. What does it mean to be ideological? So to be ideological is you have a particular view of the world, which you feel strongly about. And when you see in the real world proof, right, something that confirms this idea, this ideology, you say, oh, this, right? So you spend your life, right, with not, you're not thinking about your, you don't know you have an ideology, right? You think this is truth because this is your experience, right? And you keep on showing more evidence how, right, you see, I told you. So now the people who say, I am speaking from political science, they have the most influence. If you could convince people, right, that you're speaking with authority, right? Authority. But these people, the only authority they have is because they're saying, and they're very good at this, at making the case. They're very good at making the case for their ideology. And if the better case they make, the more people will be looking. It's like, yeah. And if you're at all susceptible to that idea, it's like, oh my God, you see, this person has the truth, right? Because if you have a similar idea, look, just you'll tell your friends, go listen to this person. And they're like, yeah, unbelievable. Because they take examples you didn't think of. Like, yeah, now that he's right. You know, mm-hmm, right? Because you're not aware, like, hold on, step back. What would they say, right? That's why we have to have that's why we have to be political scientists. We have to say, hold on, right? Why do I think that this? So that's why there's such a danger to the world, is because the stuff people believe that's confirmed by all the social media that they get.
Right. It's like it's the very nature of just like bias and, you know, conflict, polarization is, you know, it's just so easy to build a biased worldview because you just start building from the things that you see. And once you start looking in a huge complex world, it's pretty easy to pull out those things. I mean, I saw that with, you know, with some of the narratives in America around, you know, the immense racism and hate crimes and such. I mean, some of those stories I would see, you know, and Wilfred Riley wrote a whole book about a lot of the hoaxes there and how media often ran with, you know, credulous interpretations of some of these stories. And you would see, you know, so for example, you might see like, oh, there was a swastika drawn somewhere and you know, people would act as if like that was a significant symbol of something going on in that neighborhood. But, you know, the thing clearly that could be just like a young kid trying their best to get a reaction from people. And if the easiest way to get a reaction and cause drama is to put a swastika on something, you know, so these kinds of things where use those things to build a narrative about this deep anti-Semitism. But it's like, is that really what's happening? Who are those people? You know,
hey, what you're saying is 100% truth, right? Of course, these things. Now, if you were to write that in an article, right, or in a podcast, it would be people reacting to that, right? And therefore you wouldn't say it, right? Because hold on, you're saying anti-Semitism doesn't exist, right? Well, why are you even talking about this, right? So therefore, any reflection of the real world is already if it's a threat to a certain narrative, which is what I write about, this has our culture. The reaction is not that they don't have cognitive empathy with you, like, oh, that's true what he's saying, right? They don't look at the world, right? Like, yeah, it is true. It doesn't matter. One tweet. We don't know what one tweet means. Like Jeffrey Goldberg in 2016 of The Atlantic took a whole bunch of Nazi tweets, right? And this very influential article showed 15 examples, and he interpreted the meaning of each tweet. Meaning, when you read this, you think the person who sent this tweet wants to kill Jews like this, right? So each tweet he made into an idea that this is the ideology of the person sending it. That's what it says. This is the ideology of the people sending the tweets. This tweet is this. So, I mean, this is very ethnocentric, this behavior. But how, just a second. But that influence, that when you have the editor-in-chief, when you put that into the world, then every tweet means, then it's over. I'm basically.
Yeah. Well, in the, you know, the, I mean, there's plenty of documented cases too. I mean, yeah. Reaching for confident assumptions about what people are thinking with all these, you know, one-off messages. I mean, there was a recent story about the Israel-Hamas thing where somebody found all these anti-Semitic messages on a message board at a college. I can't remember which college, but people were also acting as if this had great significance. But to me, the things you don't know are that could literally be one person, that could be one, you know, asocial, mentally unwell person. That could even be like there's cases of people with hate crimes, of people faking hate crimes to get attention for a cause. So it's like you don't know.
Of course, this is the world we live in. It's a moral. We're living in a moral panic. Okay, mm-hmm. This is a moral panic. Just to the bigger picture, there is a state, Israel. Let's be we're stepping outside, right? If someone from another planet comes, what do they see? They see a state fighting with these other people, right? And they see people who are more loyal to one side and the other side, right? And when the state, you know, and the people who are on this side, right? When they see what Israel is doing, they're going to experience it a certain way, right? So if everything is interpreted from your perspective, if there's no other side, right? If there's no other perspective but your perspective, if it's just, don't you realize how that makes me feel? That's what Israel, you have to think of Israel's perspective, because all what happened to them is the most horrible thing that can happen to a country. If it happens to any other country, they would do the same thing as Israel. But here's the issue. They are living every day with the story, whereas the rest of the world, they saw the story, and most people said, oh my God, that's so horrible. But at some point, they're on to the new story, and the new story is every day, you know, innocents dying and Israel doing what they're doing. Meanwhile, in Israel, when they look at their world, they say, didn't you see what happened to us? Right. That's why Barry Weiss said at some point, these people are celebrating Jewish death. Right. Anyone who's demonstrating against the war is celebrating Jewish death. Don't you remember what happened to us? Right. That you don't empathize with what happened to us. Right. And the whole narrative that they have, their whole ideology. If you don't agree their ideology is the real world, that makes you on the side of Hamas, mm-hmm. right? So that's our situation, and everyone chooses to fight it differently. Yeah, I mean, you have all these depolarization things, right? But look what you're up against. People who have ideologies, and they're saying it's political science. They're not saying this is my politics. They're saying this is the truth about the world, and more evidence, and more evidence, and more evidence. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point to segue, because the more I've looked into the liberal academic work around, like, you know, the claims of high amounts of racism amongst conservatives and Trump voters, like, that a lot of that work is just so weak to me. And you know, I'm not the only person that says that. Like, Musa al-Gharbi, academic, it wrote a great paper called Race and the Race for the White House, that examined just some of the really bad and, you know, frankly, just kind of amazingly bad to me academic work that was used to take the worst possible framing of what this data says about what the, you know, what conservatives and what Trump voters believe. And I was kind of, you know, I was actually kind of astounded, because those are the things that were used to then paint this picture. They were like the foundation of, like, what journalists would point to frame, or pundits would point to, or politicians, Democrat politicians would point to build their case of, like, this is the horrible white supremacists and bigots that we're up against. You know, it was almost just like taken as a fact in some quarters, and some in very influential quarters, that these things were true. But then you go look at the data that the things are built on, and it's just such bad academic work.
I'll go ahead and cut that talk there. As I stated at the beginning, I'm going to release the second part of my talk with Yakov Hirsch later. That part of the talk focuses on American polarization and our polarized views of Trump. That will be out in a few days. This has been the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zach Elwood. You can learn more about it at peoplewhoreadpeople.com. Thanks for watching.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.